you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Content warning. This episode includes discussion of struggles with mental health, drug abuse, and possible violence.
In our previous episode, one of our regular guests shared with us the story of Michael Bryson, a young man who, back in August of 2020, disappeared mysteriously while attending what some describe as a rave at the Hobo Campground in Oregon. Close to 3 years later, his parents, Parrish and Tina Bryson, still search for answers on what happened to their son.
But that's not all they do. They have also started the Michael Bryson Foundation, which works to help other people who have missing loved ones and don't know where to turn. We will include a link to the foundation's website in our notes.
Parrish and Tina were kind enough to speak with us and share with us their very personal account of what the last few years have been like. They also offer some practical advice and support for anyone else who ever finds themselves having to deal with the disappearance of a loved one.
This talk gets emotional. We don't know if it's apparent on the audio, but at different times we believe all four of us in the conversation got choked up talking about Michael, how he touched the lives of those around him, and how his memory inspires Parrish and Tina to work to aid others.
My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews.
We're the Murder Sheet.
And this is The Disappearance of Michael Bryson, Part 2, The Loss and the Legacy. Parrish began by telling us about the last time he saw Michael.
We were home August 3rd of 2020, and Michael wanted to, he asked if he could have some gas money to go on this camping trip, and I told him there was a few things around the house that I needed help with, and if he wanted to come out and help me for a little bit, you know, that would not be a problem. So he came out, and we worked outside for a couple hours, and then he came inside and visited with Mom, and his sister was there also, which was kind of different because she normally isn't there on a Monday. But anyway, we all got to visit with him a little bit, and he gave us all hugs and said, "I love you," to each one of us, which is not out of the norm for Michael. And then he left, had a doctor's appointment around 6 or 6:30 that evening, and then drove up past Dorena towards Hobo Camp to go to this birthday party / rave. It was supposed to be like a 3-4-5 day event. We found out later that him and his buddy who was driving actually got lost and almost turned around and came home, but they did one more loop. And anyway, the area out there, the mile markers and the roads are really different. When the roads come together and go apart, the mile markers change. And if you're not familiar with the area, it's very confusing. So anyway, they got up there. I think they got up there around 9 or 9:30 Monday evening. And, the party was already going. And they had asked Michael, they invited Michael up to play a couple sets, to DJ a couple sets with, Ben. Ben is the young man who drove him up. And they had a couple other DJs that were there. So anyway, it was basically a renegade or a rave. It was 24/7 for 3 or 4 days, and music and partying and drinking and whatever was up there. I mean, they had everything up there, so whatever you wanted was there. This proceeded through till people were coming and going. We were told that at any given time there was probably 60 to 70 people there. People from Portland, Eugene, Cottage Grove, all over. And then once the locals caught wind that there was something going on, they all converged up there as well. We were told that Michael hung out Tuesday. His original plans were to come home Tuesday morning, but he actually came. I don't know if someone talked him into it or just staying later. We're not quite sure about that. But the guy who took him up there actually came into town and bought a sub sandwich and a drink and I think of some fruit or something with Michael's card, and then went back up. So he did have the opportunity to come down and come home, but like I said, for some reason he stayed, which is not unlike Michael. He was one of those carefree kids that was the life of the party. Everybody loved him. And anyway, that proceeds into Tuesday night / Wednesday morning. We were told that a few people showed up from Eugene around 2:30. Well, 12:30 was one group, 2:30 was another group, and they both claimed to have seen Michael. And the last supposedly sighting of Michael was about 4 o'clock. He was on a bus with two individuals, and they said that he just like snapped and said, "What, you don't want me here?" and got up and left the bus. One thing that Tina and I would like to address at this point was there's a lot of things going around that Michael was on medication for being bipolar and some other things, and mood stabilizers, what they were saying. Michael was on gabapentin, but Michael did not take it faithfully. So for them to say that he had like a psychotic break or a mood, all of a sudden mood change, that's not like Michael. Even when he was using, that was not like Michael. But anyway, supposedly he walked off the bus at 4. A few minutes later, they decided they should probably go out and look for him. And this is 4 in the morning on Wednesday morning on the 5th. And they supposedly drove up and down the road in both directions for 5, 10, 15 minutes. One person said she went 20 miles and nobody saw Michael at all. One thing I'd like to say is Michael was scared death of dark. And high or not, Michael would not take off in the dark by himself and go very far. They tried telling us that it was so dark they couldn't see what direction he went when he got off the bus. There was a full moon that night. I was up there the very next night with an almost full moon, and you could see everything unless you were underneath the trees, the canopy of the trees. It was like not daylight, but I mean, you could definitely see. So I have a little problem with not knowing which direction he went when he got off the bus. We did not get notified. Well, let me roll back a little bit. Someone did leave camp. There was a car that left camp that came in to supposedly freshen up and take showers and whatnot and pick up a young man who had been to the party, at, I believe, on Monday, but had left. So they went and picked him up and told him that Michael was missing, that they needed his help to find him. They left pretty early in the morning. They did not get back until 1 in the afternoon. During that whole time, nobody called us. Nobody called authorities. It wasn't until later in the afternoon that someone else came into town and called his roommate and asked, you know, hey, have you seen Michael? Called his ex-girlfriend, have you seen Michael? Of course, no one had seen him. The authorities did not get notified until, I believe it was like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, that Michael had been missing. So he had already been gone for 12 hours. By the time we were notified at 5, and we got up there shortly thereafter because Tina was working. I believe we were up there about 6:30 or 7, maybe somewhere around 7. And when we got there, search and rescue was there, questioning some people. And he came over to us and basically told us that he did not suspect any foul play, that Michael just kind of walked off and we'll find Michael, you know, eventually, you know, whether it be by a tree or a stump, or he's probably just hunkered down and scared and cold and everything. But I can tell you right now, when we drove up there, nobody was looking for Michael. They were walking up and down the road, drinking and smoking and just having a good time. It wasn't until Thursday when we actually had active searches going on, where his friends came up from Eugene and his friends from Portland came down, and we had an average of probably 150 to 200 people Thursday and Friday. Saturday, I don't even know how many people showed up on Saturday. And this is also with search and rescue involved in their own gridding and searching. We were up there for 19 days. So that would have been the 24th of August was when we finally came home off the mountain and stopped searching every day at that point. But during those searches, I just want to go back and reiterate that we did grid searches as well as search and rescue. We did not get in their way. We overlapped after they went through with their dogs. We would go back through. There wasn't one trail, creek bed, road that wasn't traveled. We had check-ins and check-outs with people. The reason I'm saying how thorough we were is we got several tips, you know, around Thanksgiving that Michael may have been placed somewhere down in Curtin. So we were down in Curtin doing a pretty extensive search. And the very next weekend, someone spotted some of Michael's items that he had been wearing up just down from Lund Campground, which is about a half mile to a mile from Hobo, on the other side of the creek, not the roadside, but the other side of the creek. They were on a slant of a hill in plain sight. I can tell you with 99.9% certainty, those were not there in August. We had, like I said, several search parties that went down through that area 3 different times. Search and rescue went down through there 3 different times. My brother-in-law actually said, I walked around that bush. Those were not there. So someone planted some of Michael's items back up there at the beginning of December. Now, why, I have no idea, other than maybe we were close to something in Curtin. Fast forward a little bit more. We still get tips probably 2 or 3 times a week. That's not including how much Lane County gets. We are very involved with Lane County Search and Rescue and the Sheriff's Department with our detective. And it's one of the biggest missing person cases in recent history in Lane County. I look at the man hours, I look at the notes, the notebooks and everything, and there's been a lot of time and effort put into finding Michael.
Has law enforcement generally been a good resource for you and supportive of this search? What's been your interactions with them?
So I'm going to be very cautious on how we approach this subject. Mm-hmm. Like I'd mentioned before, my brother-in-law is in law enforcement. I have the utmost respect for anybody who does that job. With that being said, the first probably 6 to 8 months of Michael's case, I do not feel got the, I'm not going to say attention, but I'm going to say What's the word I'm looking for? he was basically excused as either a little druggie or a dealer that was got high or overdosed and we'll find him by a tree or by a stump, or a hunter will find him. And that was it. That was pretty much the ideals, if you want to say that, at the very beginning. Since we've learned more with the, like I said, with the tips that have came in and other things, I can sit here and tell you that I'm certain that Michael fell into some foul play, who at this point, you know, we're still piecing that together. So with that being said, the first probably 6 to 8 months of the investigation, I don't feel was as thorough or active as it should have been. Like when I would call in and talk with the sheriff's department, there was still tips that were sitting on people's desks that were 3-4 weeks old. To me, that's not acceptable, especially when they're good tips. And I understand with law enforcement, there's a ladder of priorities, if you want to call it that. You know, of course, you've got your murder and child abduction and rape and all those things that are high on the ladder. The bottom rung is missing people. And I believe that is something that we, as a society, we really need to change. There's a difference between someone who is missing and someone who just runs away because they're pissed off at their mom and dad for telling them no or something like that. I mean, there's a huge difference. And when you can gather the facts and you know someone truly is missing, I think that we need to change our laws and some of our just our insights of how we deal with missing people and how we view missing people. One thing that I have learned through all of this, I've learned a lot, but one thing that sticks out in my mind, there's no such thing as an addict. You basically have a person with an addiction problem. And that is the mindset that we need to start getting into people all around. And again, with law enforcement, I understand how they can kind of get hardened with their views because of what they see every day and what they deal with every day. But at night, when you go home and see your family, someone is missing a loved one out of their family. And that someone is just as important as your wife or child that's sitting across the table from you.
I think that's a great point. What's more fun than living out your own cozy mystery?
You know, Kevin and I love to explore real life mysteries. Well, sometimes it's a nice break to get immersed in a fictional mystery story. And playing the free to download hidden object game, June's Journey, is just like starring in your own caper.
This game is a great way to sharpen your observational skills and encourage yourself to take quick, re-energizing breaks throughout the day. You play as June Parker, a flapper / sleuth who navigates jazz age mysteries with aplomb.
In between levels, you can also build up your own fancy island estate. And you know I'm all about that. You can plant flowers, float on swan ponds, and even set loose a beautiful horse. It's very fun.
We enjoy playing this game when we're waiting around for a source to call us back, or when we're stuck outside waiting for a courthouse to open up. It's great fun.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I wanted to jump back when we first contacted you I think you indicated that you felt a lot of people got some details wrong about this case. I think you spoke about that a little bit in terms of the gabapentin and stuff. And I just wanted to give you both an opportunity to address what are some of the things that people have gotten wrong about this case or about Michael?
I think, you know, what he was wearing, a lot of the articles that came out said that he had a white t-shirt and tan shorts on. We know that Michael had black shorts on when he went missing. We're not sure if he had a long sleeve black t-shirt on or a black sweatshirt, a hoodie. He had a hat and he had some rainbow crocs on. He also sometimes, you know, some in their description, you know, his eyes were green. They were not blue. His hair was not short when he went missing. His hair was just about shoulder length. Very, very pretty brown color. Very soft. Believe it. His hair looked better than ours. But yeah, there was things like that came out, you know, and then and the dates and the times, you know, we're not for sure that Michael went missing right at 4 a.m. I think that Michael went missing sometime between 2 and 5 or 6 a.m. But again, we were not there, so we don't know for sure what time that he went missing.
And something else on the time frame is that up there at that hobo camp, there's no cell service. So the only time someone would have their cell phone out would be to take pictures. The generation of Michael's generation, very seldom do you see any of them wearing watches. So how they were so precise on the 4:15 off the bus thing is, I just don't get that.
And all of them had the same story. When the detectives came up 3 days after Michael went missing, there was a group of detectives that came up and they walked across the street. Most of the campers, most of the people had dispersed
by Friday morning,
a lot of them actually by Thursday afternoon. So when the detectives came up, I believe it was on Friday, they went across the street and they questioned the remaining people that were left from the party, and they all were questioned together and they all had the same story.
And we brought over we didn't bring over one of our friends. Her dad is a retired state police detective, homicide detective. And he sat at the picnic table and listened to everything that was going on Friday. And he looked at me and he said, Parrish, he says, they're lying. He said, whether or not they had anything to do with Michael or not, they're lying. He said, nobody has the same exact recollection. Nobody. And if you have six or seven people that are telling the same exact story right down to a T, he said, they're lying. That's rehearsed. He gave me an example. He says, you know, you go to someone's house and you have dinner and you know, you might ask, you know, hey, what'd you have for dinner? And it's like, oh, I had, you know, fried potatoes and chicken. And you can ask my wife, what'd you have? She goes, oh, I had, you know, mashed potatoes and fried chicken. And, you know, I mean, there's going to be similarities, but the story's not going to be identical. And that was a major red flag for him. And, you know, and there was some other things that came up that he just shook his head and said, no. He said, this is not right. We did contact, going back a little further, we did contact the FBI because it did happen on federal land. The FBI told us that basically Lane County Sheriff's Office would have to ask for their help before they could get involved. I'm hoping that we're to that point where they will start asking for more help because the case is not cold. I mentioned earlier, we still get 2, sometimes 3 tips a week, and that doesn't account what Lane County Sheriff's Office gets. So it's far from cold.
Right. And if an agency needs some assistance, then there shouldn't be any reason not to ask for it.
Correct. So we've gotten so many different scenarios at the very beginning, you know, and we've narrowed it down to about 2 different scenarios possibly. We still don't know for sure, but with all the tips that we've gathered, these are the 2 scenarios that, you know, were plausible, I should say. Again, you know, we're just waiting for those last few missing pieces. What I can say about law enforcement right now is we have a detective on the case who is very invested in Michael and in Michael's case. We meet with him about every other week, we share everything we can or we have with him. And he only shares what he can because it's an open investigation on law enforcement side. But he's very, like I said, very, very vested in Michael. And we got some good tips about a month ago that he was very excited about, you know, and we're hoping that some of these things will open up to finally bringing Michael home.
We understand you cannot get into specifics with these scenarios because this is ongoing and this is something that's being looked into right now from law enforcement. Are there any general statements you can make about this case and what direction it might be heading in?
Well, what I can share with you is what's already been out, what's been out on Facebook as far as other people's ideas, you know, of what may or may not have happened. Things like that, you know, I can tell you that there's a, you know, one thing is, you know, Michael overdosed. We do know that there was individuals at the party that puddled Michael. And if you're not familiar with that term, puddling is they intentionally overdose you on acid. And then one of two things can happen. You know, you can either lose your mind or you can come back from it. Also, when they puddle them, they make fun of them. They haze them, in a sense, you know. And there's a group of these individuals in the Eugene area that have been known to do this just for fun. In their mind, it's fun. So we do know that Michael was puddled. Now, whether or not he came out of that or not, we don't know. So one scenario that has been all over the place, not just what we think, but this is, like I said, all over Facebook, and that is that Michael had overdosed. They panicked. And they got rid of him. Another possible scenario is, you know, Michael was huddled out of his mind, basically walked out on the road and maybe something happened to him on the road. But until we get those key pieces, we're not going to know what really happened to Michael.
What else can you Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm at a loss right now. There's days where Dad is in detective mode and everything is black and white and I do very well. And I go through these tips and I just put them in categories and I just file them and give them to the detective. And then there's days where it hits me like a wave and I feel like I'm living someone else's nightmare. That's probably one of the hardest parts for me. Mom, on the other hand, Tina,
I'm a wreck all the time.
It's Mom. I mean, Mom's got a much more, I'm not, just a different kind of bond than what dads have with their children. Mom has a very unique bond. And it's very, there's days where, you know, she can do things and she does well. And then there's days where she doesn't even want to leave the house, you know, and we're trying to figure out how do you move on and live for yourself and for you, the remaining siblings and for other family members and, you know, without being lost in the grief. It's very difficult. Very difficult. We've lost a lot of, friends on the way because they don't know how to approach us. One thing that I've said over and over again is there are no words. Just give me a hug. Because there's nothing you can say that's going to comfort me. There's nothing you're going to say that's going to make Tina feel better. So.
And there's nothing that you're going to say that can bring Michael back.
No. Sorry about that tangent.
don't apologize. Nothing we can say, but.
You can.
I can't even imagine. And one thing that we know that you guys have done is try to be there for other families going through something similar.
Yeah, that's if you want to see a silver lining, however you want to say that, with everything that's happened is we have formed a foundation called the Michael Bryson Foundation, and we try and reach out to other families that are going through this and give them the tools that they need to, number one, get the word out. Number two, how to organize your tips so it's, you know, what to do. Go to Walmart and get a burner phone. Don't use your personal cell phone on flyers. That was a big mistake because you can't turn your phone off now. You know, you can't turn it upside down and just leave it alone because that might be that tip that comes through. We've learned a lot in 2.5 years, and we like to think that we have some insight to people that are just walking through this door, that we will be able to kind of guide them through and and make it as, I'm not going to say painless because it's very painful, but make it easier for them to cope with what's being thrown at them. We also, on the website that we have, we try and promote some mental health, you know, awareness, addiction awareness, where to go to get help. You know, mental health has had such a negative stigma in our society for so many years that people just don't talk about it. It's rushed under the rug. And I don't care who you are, everybody has some form of mental health issue. And we need to be able to talk about it in front of people. We need to be able to say, hey, I don't feel right today, or I'm not doing good, and not feel bad about saying that. I don't want to say that, you know, I'm not trying to paint a beautiful picture of Michael with what I'm about ready to tell you. But, you know, there's other things that have been said about Michael. You know, he didn't know a stranger. Everybody was Michael's best friend. Michael made everybody feel like they were his best friend. Michael had a knack of making everyone laugh. He had a knack of just, he walked in the room and it just lit up. And we've had so many stories come through, whether it be through Facebook or Messenger, people call us directly and tell us stories of how Michael literally saved their life. And, you know, those kind of stories, I couldn't be more proud of Michael. And like I said, our biggest hope is that families don't have to go through this, but if they do go through it, that we can be some sort of support for them. Something that they can use to draw on and know that, yes, they can make it through another day when you don't feel like you can, when you feel like you just want to give up.
What kind of advice would you have for others in this situation? You mentioned about the burner phone, but anything else that you can share?
Take pictures.
Take lots of pictures.
Take pictures of every car, every license plate, get every name, get every phone number. Mm-hmm. Every detail you can think of to get from people that are there.
Question everybody around. There were so many people up there camping when Michael went missing, and for people not to see anything, not to hear anything, it's just unreal to us still to this day that he just vanished without a trace.
And one thing that we were told by Heather Shutka, she's from Canada, from British Columbia, I believe. Her son went missing 5 years ago. His name is Ryan. She reached out to Tina. I believe it was like the first week or the second week she reached out to Tina, and she told her, she said, "Mom to mom, I got to tell you something." And she said, "You're going to hear all kinds of horrible stories. Do not believe or do not put any weight in those stories until you have the solid facts to support those. Because if you sit in your chair or lay in bed and think about all these different tips that come through, this happened to my son or my daughter or my loved one, it'll drive you crazy. You will literally lay there in pain and in ache for them." So that would be something that I would share as well, is don't, you write it down, you file it, you do whatever you need to do with the tip, but you don't dwell, did this happen to our loved one? Because if you do, you will go crazy. You will go crazy. That was some of the best advice that we got from somebody. And of course, you know, to keep Michael's memory going, we need to keep Michael's face and name in front of people, and we will do that. We will do that. One thing that we'd like to see, and if we have to do it, we will, is we'd like to have some kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a flyer or a, like the old composition books you used to have in English class in high school. We would like to design a book that has basically what to do in the first, you know, 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours, steps to take. We're working with, we want to work with law enforcement and search and rescue to make sure that we're given the right information, and then leave the last part of that book, like the last 50 pages or whatever, empty for notes. Because when we went up there, we were writing tips on receipts, napkins, whatever we could find in the car.
Our hands.
Because, I mean, we honestly thought we were going to go up there and be there for the night, the next day, and bring Michael home. It was finally on about day three or four. I looked at my sister-in-law and I said, "Would you please go to Walmart and get some notebooks?" And she went and got 6 notebooks for the key individuals, I'd say, that were really gathering the information so we could write them all down. And then later, about 6 months later, I took all those notebooks and compiled them into a three-ring binder that I continue to put all the tips in to this day. yes, take lots of notes, take lots of pictures, and question everybody. I don't care if it's a car parked on the side of the road. You pull over and ask them if they saw anything or
heard anything.
If people want to help you or help support the foundation or mm-hmm. help Michael's case, what sort of things can they do?
Well, we'll start out with a monetary way. If they want to donate, they can go to the michaelbrysonfoundation.com on the website there, and they can donate. And the donations that we receive there go towards searching for not just Michael, but for other families. Since we are a nonprofit organization, 51% of my time has to be devoted to helping other families and not Michael, if that makes sense, because we're nonprofit. So a majority of our time is again, trying to direct and help other people and then, you know, focus on Michael as well. So monetarily, that's one way they can do it. We also have, we have stickers, we have decals for cars, sweatshirts, t-shirts, anything that we can use to get not just Michael's name out there, but there's a catchphrase that we have grabbed a hold of called "There is no finish line." There's also a happy sad face, which was one of Michael's last tattoos. So we've used the happy sad face as part of our logo. Also, it promotes people to ask, you know, what's that about? And the first thing we say is, you know, of course, it's in regards to our son who went missing, but it's also it represents mental health. You know, you're happy, you're sad. Yeah, I mean, you're a mixture of both. So it's basically to promote mental health awareness. There is no finish line, basically. I'll let Tina tell you about that.
So after Michael went missing, we had a package delivered to our house. And I would stay up on the mountain for a couple days, and then I would come home, make sure our adult foster home that we were running, you know, had everything that they needed and our animals were taken care of and all that. And then I would head back up. And this package came and it had Michael's name on it. And I sat it at the table and just going back and forth, you know, should I open this? No, I shouldn't, because I don't know what it is. And, you know, it's something that he ordered off of Amazon. And anyways, a couple of days later, I decided that the curiosity was killing me. So I opened it. And here was this t-shirt. It's a blue t-shirt with kind of flames up at the bottom, kind of orange and red, and it's a Nike t-shirt, and it says "There is no finish line." And Michael had ordered that t-shirt before he went missing, had it delivered to our home, and I just looked up and I said, "Michael, there is no finish line, and we absolutely will not give up, and we will continue to be your voice until we bring you home."
And not just a voice for Michael, but there is no finish line, meaning to me as well, is we will never stop talking about, you know, mental health awareness, addiction. We will never stop talking about missing people and how important they are. And it's very important to bring them home, one way or another. So in one aspect, you know, like she said, there is no finish line. We may be finished when we bring Michael home, but we're not. The Michael Bryson Foundation, I hope, will continue on after we're gone. Like, again, just helping search for loved ones, as well as creating, like I said, awareness of mental health issues, that is not a negative thing. We all have some form. Another thing that, you know, like I said, just supporting, I mean, that's just talking. I mean, if people just talk about mental health, that's supporting. I mean, it's going to open a door of communication for family members. Oh boy. Tina wants to talk about Africa a little bit.
yeah.
So Michael, I mean, I don't, you guys can edit this and you can put things wherever you want.
Yeah.
But, or in chronological order, however you want to say it. But anyway, so Michael was very involved in church growing up. Both of our children were. And both of our children went on several mission trips. Michael went to Africa twice, and he fell in love with Africa. That was, I mean, I can't say anything else other than he fell in love with Africa. Our daughter, she went to Cambodia probably 5 times while she was in college, working with children that were involved in the sex trade. down there. So both of our kids have been exposed to a lot. They've not lived in a glass bubble, I should say. We've tried to be very well rounded with them, you know, and as far as our faith is concerned, we never shoved it down their throat. We just made sure that they were exposed to it. When they got old enough, they made their own decisions. One thing that's out there about Michael is, you know, they were saying that, you know, Michael hated his family and he couldn't wait to get away from them. And that's why he ran away. And I can tell you right now, when Michael was in his deepest, deepest valley, dealing with the most depressing, life-changing, life-altering issues, he called mom and dad. There wasn't 2 days that we did not hear from Michael. When he went through his addiction issues, same thing. We always heard from Michael. So by day two or three up there, we knew. Michael, if he was somewhere else, all these people would say, oh yeah, we saw him here, we saw him there, he's down. You know, if Michael had any access to any kind of social media and or phone or anything, he would have reached out to mom and dad. There's no question there. Anyway, going back to how Michael was, no matter what Michael was going through, like I said before, he always put everybody first. Everybody else was first. And that's what's so hard about this is knowing that and knowing the people he was, what I would say his true friends, not the friends that he was camping with. He'd only known this group of friends maybe 3 months. If he would have been with his true friends, he would be home today. I think that's where I'm going to leave it at that.
We really want people to understand what Michael was like, what he was like as a person. Earlier, you mentioned you've heard stories that make you feel very proud of him. And I wonder if you could talk about that or maybe share some of your favorite memories of Michael so people can really understand what he was like.
Michael was an absolute goofball. Like Tara said, you know, Michael loved music. He loved movies. He played in...
At three years old, that kid could tell you who was starring in movies.
Yeah.
And what the plot was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy how much that kid could retain.
Oh, he loved movies. He played sports in high school. You know, he was involved in Boy Scouts. He was involved in everything. And after high school, he went to Northwest Christian University. And about a year, and that's when we really started noticing some, you know, some changes in him. But Michael, when we were up there searching, everybody that came up to me would say, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm Michael's best friend. The next person in line, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm Michael's best friend. And so by the end of the time, you know, this whole group of people was coming. We're like, okay, we get it. You guys are all Michael's best friends. And that's how Michael made you feel, you know, that you were the only one, the most important one. And he made everybody laugh. Michael, when I think of Michael, I can see Michael's smile. He had the best smile, most genuine smile, the happiest smile. Even when Michael wasn't happy, he still put that smile on his face. And he was a good kid. Michael was a good kid. Yeah, Michael chose some different paths, you know, that maybe you or I didn't choose, but he did go down those roads. But that doesn't define Michael, and it doesn't change who Michael is. People say, you know, well, he was out in the woods. He was deep in the woods with a lot of drugs and alcohol. What did he expect? I can tell you what Michael expected, and Michael expected to come home, and he didn't.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He was very loving. Very loving young man. Like I said, his trips to Africa, as well as his relationships with people, not just the best friend people, but, you know, anyone that was close to Michael. I mean, they knew that Michael truly loved them. Yeah. So as the kids were growing up, one of our things that we did every year was I would load up in our car with a 6-passenger car, and we would load up myself, and each kid got to pick a friend of theirs. And then I got to choose one that was kind of a mutual friend. And we would take a trip down to Magic Mountain, which is about a 15-hour drive from here. And we would drive down in one day, spend one day at the park and drive back the next. I mean, that's how crazy it was. But we had the most fun on those trips.
Lots of memories.
He sounds like a truly wonderful person.
And one of the things that we are experiencing now is, you know, a lot of Michael's friends are, you know, getting married and having children and moving on in their lives. And as hard as it is for us to witness that, we are so, so blessed to have Michael's friends still include us. We were able to go to a wedding last year. It was one of Michael's, childhood friends from first grade. He was like a son to us. And, Michael was missing at that time. And this young man looked up at us and he says, "Michael's here." And he showed us some cufflinks that he had made with Michael's pictures on them and little things on each one. Little things like that, you know, just mean the world to us. You know, and knowing that Michael touched his life, you know, in a way that he felt like he was a brother. And he felt like, you know, even after they'd had their differences, they still came back together and remained, you know, friends. And to the point where even though Michael couldn't stand up there with him, he was there with him. That's the kind of friend Michael was.
We really thank you for sharing these very special memories with us. Is there anything we didn't ask you about that you'd like to include?
The other podcast, it was called Nowhere to Be Found, Amanda Papineau did with us. And it was very, very good information that was put out. She actually interviewed some people that were at the party that were there. So there was firsthand information from people that were there. And also from two of our private investigators that we used during the search.
The only thing I would say is, all the information about Michael is on the website, and then also the Facebook page that was started. It's called Let's Find Michael Bryson. There's almost 25,000 followers worldwide on that page right now, and it is being used as a platform again for other family with missing people. We're able to approve posts so word can get out for their family almost immediately, because we're in every state. I mean, we're all over the place with this Facebook page. So we've had, you know, some people come out and say, you know, thank you for doing this because of what being on Michael's page, our loved one was found, you know, or we had a lot more people out searching than we ever thought we would have because word got out through Michael's page. So in that aspect, I mean, it's no kudos to Tina and I whatsoever. It all goes back to, again, to Michael and his story. And again, his infectious smile and just when people that don't even know Michael, I've never met Michael, when they see him and they hear the story, they fall in love with the kid. And that's just the way he was.
Thank you both so much for talking with us about Michael and his story. And I do give you both an incredible amount of kudos for the work you're doing for other families. And if there's anything we could ever do to help, please just, you know, you have our contact info now, and I'm happy to be a resource for you.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. We appreciate anybody that wants to talk about Michael and you know, not just Michael, but I mean, also talk about, like I said, mental health and addiction, because, those are some very serious issues that one, unfortunately, can fold right into the other, and then you can end up in a situation like we're in right now. So, again, thank you guys for reaching out too.
And thank you very much.
Well, our hope is to bring him home soon. You know, we're not going to give up. We're not going to give up. There is no finish line.
We'd like to thank Parrish and Tina for talking with us. We will include links to their Facebook group and to the Michael Bryson Foundation in our notes. And if you have information about Michael, please get in touch.
Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for the Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.